Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. Yes. Man, we just keep this thing rolling. It's another week. We're getting closer and closer to draft time. You are now talking with TD, rocking with yours truly. I appreciate each of you for tuning in. Man, we got a loaded show today as Elijah's over there bobbing to the beat, hitting the switches. Man, we got Tutu Atwell. We got Asante Samuel Jr. We got Brevin Jordan. I wanted to say Brevin High Energy Jordan because I know that guy – he has buttons, and I'm gonna push his buttons, Elijah. We're gonna push his buttons, and we're gonna get him to talk.
He's got some tells. He's got a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah. So I'm gonna seek that chip, and maybe even find out if it's a boulder. So that's what we're gonna get into there. But first things first, man. I think you know how we've been doing this show. It might be time for that music. Let me get that music, please. Ooh. What are we? That's right. Yeah. All right. That's right. You hear the music. That means that Chris Sanders, a.k.a. Wesley Person, is coming on. What's going on, man?
Man, I am good, man. You look like Morgan Freeman and Don Cheadle mixed. So you look like one of them.
Man, you could have.
When that came on, man, I was about to show my rapping skills. I got skills. You want to hear a snippet?
You got some bars? Let me get some bars.
Chilling on the mic because you know you can see my name is Chris Sanders and his name is TD.
Ooh.
I got my contract coming out tomorrow.
And that was G-rated, folks.
That was G-rated.
Put that one on Disney.
He's on Disney.
Yes, sir. Well we're gonna try to keep this show G-rated because you know, there's some things that some people in the Titans media were pretty upset about. It could be on Sanders or Salty. I don't really look at it as a reason to get Salty. Uh-huh. But we're also gonna keep it G-rated, actually, you know, because another guy that we want to talk about, he is full of exclamation point. And beeps, and we'll get into Jim Schwartz in a little bit. But first things first, man, what was your take on Mike Vrabel and just how he answered the questions? Because I'll say questions, plural, about just the hire of Shane Bowen, like giving him the title.
You know, it's just funny because I'm not saying he's hiding anything. It's just he's straight to the point. And I think he's just getting tired of people asking him the question. He's getting irritated. Mm-hmm. But still, as the head coach, and I'm saying this out of respect because I have mad respect for Mike Vrabel, but as the head coach, your job and your duty is to answer the question. You know, you have to. I mean, that's what your role is. Your role is to coach the team, but also your role is answer the questions that need to be asked. And when you start getting mad at the media and start saying different things, then people are going to be like, man, they're gonna take it as, are you being arrogant or you just don't want to answer the questions?
And that's exactly how they're taking it. And that's something that you hear over and over again. Is Mike Vrabel too arrogant? Is his arrogance getting in the way? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say it's arrogant. I just think that he's getting tired of questions. But if you're a coach, that's your responsibility. You know, that's what you're supposed to do. I coach at Montgomery Bet Academy, and if we lose a game, I'm not, and the cameras come up to me and they want to do an interview, I can't shy away from it because that's what comes with the territory. And I think for Mike Vrabel, I have mad respect for Mike Vrabel, but he's got to understand that comes with the territory. I understand you got a lot on your plate, and I understand you got to, you know, you get the same questions every single day, but you would eliminate all the stuff that's going on if you just answered the question. I understand that you're trying to protect your guys and you're tired of answering the questions, but at the end of the day, you got to take that question mark away and end it with a period.
I think that's a really good point of just, you know what, it might be frustrating and you might be tired of it, but one way that you can end it is to actually say something a little more than what he said. I never even looked at it that way. That's an awesome perspective there, man. I like that. Well, the decision itself, like, what do you think about it? Is this something that you would have done? Would you have brought somebody in? They said they interviewed outside candidates.
All right.
What would you have done?
I think with the stuff that's going on with COVID and all this stuff and not sure about all practices, I don't know what they came up with. But I think you do want to hire somebody in because now you can keep the same philosophy and keep a little bit, when I say a little bit, of the momentum going. Because last year the Tennessee Titans had a struggling defense. I mean, guys were playing out of place. You know, one of the guys that really struggled in the defense was Byard. And I think the reason why Byard struggled is because I don't know if the terminology changed or they put him in different positions to do certain things, and maybe he struggled. But if you start changing all the philosophies and different guys are coming in and you're trying to build something, then it causes a lot of chaos. But if you just stay with the foundation that you're trying to build on and build on that and hire somebody in there as opposed to bringing somebody else in and changing up the whole thing, you can still build on something that you built on last year.
We're sharing brains here, man.
I
strongly feel that if you bring something new in, as you mentioned, with COVID and everything and having limited time to implement it and then just the whole process, even in a perfect world, right? Let's say a perfect world. We could go back to 2019 or, 2008. Yeah, 2019. Rashawn Evans, his rookie year. You know, we could go back to that. So, no, I'm sorry, 2018. I'm getting my years mixed up. Uh-huh. We'll go back to 2018, right? And one of the things that Rashawn Evans, and we know coming out of Alabama, he was a really good player, right? A really good prospect. But one of the things that he struggled with was grasping, he didn't struggle to grasp the system, but he struggled to play fast while he was grasping it, if you follow me, right? Yep. So it was just always thinking. So I remember talking to him that summer going into the 2019 season. He was like, yo, now that I finally got it, you're going to see, just wait and see. And coincidentally, the guy was one of the team leaders in tackles. You know, So it's just if you know what you're doing, if you are able to just react rather than just, you know, have to process and think and diagnose and figure stuff out, you're going to play faster. So to your point.
Yeah, but you know, if you look at Mike Vrabel always talks about he wants smart players. Mm-hmm. And people can take that and misscrew it if they want to, but it goes like this. When you're talking about smart players, you're talking about guys that don't make a mistake. And the reason why they don't make mistakes is because they're confident in the system. It doesn't mean that they're not a smart player, don't have an IQ in football. It's just that they're confident in what they're doing. If they're blitzing the A-gap, they're confident. If they're coming off the edge, there's confidence. That's what it means to play smart. So if you're bringing a different guy in with different terminologies and different ways and different techniques, then now you're back at square one because now instead of playing with confidence, he's playing unsure because he doesn't want to make the mistake.
Right, and that's the thing. You factor that in, but then going back to what you said, having something to actually build off of.
Right.
And granted, I'm not saying it was the best scheme. It clearly wasn't the best scheme. It was. I mean, there's no getting around it. You're 3rd and 7 and you're playing 10 yards off.
No, hey. No, 17 yards off. 17.
You keep going back to that Ohio State number, too. Don't think I ain't catching that.
Yeah, man,
that's true. So obviously it's not the best scheme. But that leads me to something else to ask you because I have been very strong in the stance of, hey, look, it's not just the scheme. Players weren't executing. And Wesley Woodyard came out and, you know, he has some things to say. And he was on Twitter saying, you know, everybody wants to blame it on the players so quick. I said it was a mix of both. Mm-hmm. What's your take on where the fault lied last season?
You know, it's not really anybody's fault because I know everybody tried to buy into the scheme. I just think that when you're unsure about different positions, then it falters the whole defense. I mean, and what we kept talking about the whole season is we need an edge rusher. We need an edge rusher. Mm-hmm. We need an edge rusher. All of a sudden we get Clowney and then we get Beasley. It doesn't pan out. So now there's pressures on different positions. There's pressures on the linebackers. There's pressure in the secondary. So I think that I'm not blaming the coach or players. I just think that you had a defense that was playing with so much pressure. And we always hear this. We say this term all the time. Pressure busts pipes. So you can't play with pressure. I think that this year you're going to see it a little better because there's just like what you talk about, they're building on what they had last year. So if they're understanding the concept, they're understanding, you know, different situations of what's going on with the defense, then now you're going to see a better defense and a defense that's playing with confidence.
Yeah, and that's what I expect to see, you know, a confident defense. And I just think defense, well, just period, man, just life, period. you can't really excel if you're not confident. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's a great point. But what about Jim Schwartz? Let's get into him a little bit and just talk about some of the things that he brings to the table. I know I saw him for 2 years there when I was covering the Eagles in Philly. And, man, I loved his energy during practice, and the players loved him. I loved the fight that he had.
He's
feisty, man. He used to really show his teeth going at some of the reporters, man. It was funny.
Oh, he got some fangs now.
Yeah, it was funny. So he would do that. But one of the other things that really stood out to me were his two things. One was his sense of fashion. That dude right there stayed Louis down, man. He has some, that's the Louis Vuitton Don, man, right there. You know what I'm saying? Dapper Dan style. But I always laughed at that. But
they like the Fonz.
Yeah. And the other thing was his constant references to Baltimore Orioles. He mentioned Jim Palmer. And, you know, he'll talk about like a lefty having to be ready before he comes in. And he would liken that to, the guys not being at full operating condition, you know, in training camp. Like, it was perfect, just some of the analogies. But that's what stood out to me. But I know you have an even more extensive relationship. So tell me a little bit about Schwartz.
I think he's a great coach. I mean, and there's a couple of things I love about him. Number one, he's committed to pressuring the quarterback. I mean, that what was the struggle that we had with the Tennessee Titans last year? We didn't get to the quarterback. So now you're bringing in a guy that's committed to putting pressure on the quarterback. And number two, this cat loves to blitz. He's gonna blitz you now. I mean, you can be in outside the stadium. You're gonna get blitzed. He's gonna blitz you. And he's gonna bring pressure. But I'm not concerned about the scheme. I'm not concerned about the 3-4 alignment. I'm not concerned about winning at the line of scrimmage. I'm concerned about the 3-headed monster that we have. And when I say the 300 monster, you got Shane Bowen, you got Jim Schwartz, you got Mike Vrabel. You have three different personalities. How is it gonna work? And I kind of use this illustration. You ever watch Godzilla?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite things. But remember when Godzilla was fighting the three-headed monsters? When the three-headed monsters was losing to Godzilla, the three-headed monsters started fighting amongst themselves. They were on the same body, but the three-headed monsters were fighting amongst themselves.
Yep.
The only thing that I'm concerned about, that if they start losing early, will they start fighting amongst each other? That's the only thing I'm concerned about. Because you got three great coaches, Shane Bowen, Jim Schwartz, and Vrabel. But when it goes bad, how are those guys going to handle adversity? That's the only thing I'm concerned about.
Yeah, that's a good point, and that's something that I wanted to make sure that we went over. So I'm glad you mentioned that. And I'm curious about that. Like, how are they going to handle? Now the other thing is Shane Bowen. He's not as much, but you look at Mike Vrabel and you look at Jim Schwartz. Like, these are two very Type A personalities. And that's not to say that Shane Bowen was a type B, because he's not. He's a type A also. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you look at these two, it's a bit different. So I wonder how those guys together, you know what I mean? And both of them, they have that hothead to them. You know what I'm saying? So I wonder how that's going to work.
But see, there's two things that they're going to have to do. Number one, they have to check the ego at the door. I mean, any system, any company, anything that you have, I don't care if you're the highest paid billionaire. You got to, before you step in the door, you got to check your ego at the door. Number two, you got to make it about the team. It's not about, well, I played in Super Bowls and I coached here and I won this. No, it's about, listen, what's better for the team? And that's what it's all about. Because if there's a lot of bickering and arguing in that room, how are you expecting that defense to be as one if you're not at one in the meeting rooms? That's where it all boils down to. I'm not concerned about the scheme. I'm concerned about the personalities working together. That's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we have to see. So I don't really think that we got to go into any Sanders or Salty, because I think it's once again a happy day. Oh, happy day. Come on, clap with
like
me
Al
now.
Giroux, didn't I?
No, you didn't sound like Al Giroux. You sounded like Smokey. And not Smokey Robinson, Smokey the Bear.
Boy, you crazy, man.
You're
my dog, though.
Yeah, for sure, man. Appreciate you. We'll always keep this thing rolling. And
rolling.
Yeah, man. I'll talk to you.
Appreciate you, boss. Thank you, man. Peace out.
This is Jayon Brown, and you're now talking with TD.
All right, back from the break. with TD. Here we go, man. This is a much anticipated interview. I've been wanting to have this next guest on, and you heard the music, Shut Him Down, and that's exactly what my next guest does. We got Asante Samuel Jr., Florida State cornerback, defensive back, because he'll play all over the secondary. Asante, what's good, man?
How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing really well, man. I'm excited about this interview. I really like watching your game. I love how you have what we call hashtag that dog in you. You know what I mean? And it's fun watching that. I think really where I want to start is just the NFL pedigree. Now, obviously, you know, Asante Samuel Jr., your father, senior, he was a baller. And it just seems like you inherited that dog mindset from him. Can you just kind of open up a little bit about that?
Yeah, my dad, he just tried to tell me stay humble and just focus on what I want to focus on. He just kind of let me do my own thing and just try to guide me along the way and not really interfere that much. But he's definitely been a help in my life.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's huge to have a guy who should be in the Hall of Fame. Like 51 interceptions, 6 of them touchdowns, the ball skills galore, and you kind of got a lot of those skills from him and even, you know, through your hard work. But one of the things that stands out when I watch is the feistiness. Where does that come from? Why do you have such a fight within you?
Just probably being undersized all my life. I mean, I played quarterback when I was little. I was still undersized. Just being undersized and always having that chip on my shoulder, just trying to show people that I can do it, even though I'm not the biggest or the strongest.
And then I think the thing that's interesting is you went right to Florida State. You had an impact immediately. You know, 9 PBUs, you know, 12 games as a freshman. What was it that allowed you to just hit that campus and be so effective so immediately?
I felt like I was prepared in high school. So I went to St. Thomas Aquinas and just playing against elite guys and practice every day, playing with guys in the NFL right now, like Nick Bosa, Damon Arnett, a lot of people in the NFL. So it kind of went easy for my transition going to high school to college.
And then the 14 PBUs as a sophomore, a total of 29 career. That's 11th in the ACC since 2005. So obviously you know how to stay in phase and be around the ball. What did you do to kind of develop that ability to always be there when the throw was coming?
Just trusting my technique that I work on during the season and the off season, just all around, just trusting my technique and making sure I'm in the best position I can be.
And then the match and mirror ability, that's something else that I really like about you. I mean, you're a man corner through and through, right? And you're one of those guys that if I was a defensive coordinator, I'd say, hey, look, you know, Asante, this week we're going against player X. You're traveling with him. Slot. Outside where he goes, that's your cat. Why do you have the ability to take on that type of assignment?
I feel like my quickness and my instincts helps. That's a major factor in that. And just really my instincts and just being able to locate the ball when the ball is in the air and just being able to break when the receiver breaks down.
Yeah, that definitely shows. Who would you say are some of the more intriguing matchups that you had throughout your days at Florida State?
Definitely in practice. Tamarion Terry, definitely a great person, great receiver. During the game, I'll say this year, I played against De'Ami Brown. He was very good. Just guys in that nation.
Yeah, Des Fitzpatrick out of LSU. He said you're the best corner that he went against. So clearly, you know, you left your mark with him. Tamarion Terry, I like how you mentioned him, a bigger receiver. How do you, as a guy, you know, in the 5'10 range, how do you go about combating a receiver like that and being successful?
Just really focusing on my techniques and making sure I use all my in-game things like my leverage, my splits, my keep my hands up, making sure my technique's on point at all times and this little error, you can't make any mistake.
In that type of situation, is it important for you, or how important is it, you know, to fight for that football all the way through the tuck?
It is very important. You got to do it every time the ball's in the air and comes your way. You got to make sure you fight to the end, because that little fight can be the difference between him catching and him not catching.
And we mentioned Terry. He's a guy that would obviously line up a lot on the outside. As I said, you could play all over the secondary. So there are questions, right? People will say, well, you know, he's only this big. He can't play on the outside. Why can you play on the outside? And what do you say to those people who want to question your size?
Well, I'm just going to show them that I can, or whatever teams ask me. I'm going to do whatever they want. If they want me to play outside, I'll play outside. If I play inside, well, to silence them, I'm just going to make sure that I make plays and make plays on the ball and be a playmaker. That's what I am, so I'm going to do that at the next level.
Does that irk you, though, when people question your size?
It kind of does, because there's a lot of corners that starters in the league that's smaller than me, so it kind of does irk me. But it's all good. I just have to prove myself, and everything will be all right.
And I remember a pro day on the virtual, you know, you mentioned Jair Alexander as a guy who, you know, you've set as an example of how you can win on the outside, and despite being the, you know, not being the biggest corner. So what is it about Alexander's game that you like so much?
Just his instincts. His, seems like he's a leader on the field, and just his quickness and his IQ. He's very smart. He diagnosed plays, and yeah, he's just always near the ball.
Yeah, no doubt, and it definitely shows. And we're talking to Asante Samuel Jr., Florida State cornerback. Asante, when it comes to the knowledge of the game, you know, that's something else, that the football IQ, I think that goes into your match and mirror ability. Where did you get that? I mean, is that just through constant film study? Is that through just, you know, a lot of conversations with your dad, through the coaches there at FSU? How did you develop that?
Just film study and knowing what type of formations they like to run, what their tendencies, do they like to throw in the boundary, do they like to throw in the field. Just having a lot of knowledge during the game and just implementing it from this film study.
And one of the things that you do, you know, you'll jump routes. And it takes, like, you got to be brave to do that, man. Like, if you're going to jump a route, you know, and not really be too concerned about that double move, which could lead to a big play, is that a film study thing? How did you have your relationship with some of the safeties, you know, to know that you were going to jump routes? What went into that?
Just being able to play within the coverage and making sure I always do my job, even though I'm going to jump the route, even though I got to make sure if I'm playing cover three, I can't jump it too much, because I got to make sure I have deep thirds. Just being able to know when I can do it, and just having a sense of the game and a feeling of the game.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. What are you doing now? Like, where have you worked out and did a lot of your training leading up to Pro Day and even now?
Well, Pro Day, I was working out in Dallas at Exos. They have a great staff there, great training facilities there. Yeah, and they got me right for the Pro Day.
Oh, that's what's up. So you know my guy, Brent Callaway.
Oh, yes, sir. That's my guy.
Yeah, that's he's really good, man. I've been you know, dealing with him for quite some time, so I know you're down there getting right. Tell me about when you went against Antonio Brown. I think that was what a year ago, was that?
Yeah, that was a year ago. I think around this time, it was really just going out there. He had a lot of people out there just working out with him, and you know, he has a lot of guys working out with him. So I went out there just to get some one-on-ones, and we went against each other one time, and we kind of got into it a little bit. And then after that, it was really over. I left, and that was that.
Yeah. It's funny because a lot of times, like, people that haven't played, they don't understand what goes on the field, right? And that when your juices get flowing and everything, they don't understand, like, how much talk can go on. And then it's crazy because you leave the field and that whole thing just literally stays on the field. Like, it's not something that you typically carry with you.
Yeah, there is just it was just a little football thing. It was nothing major.
Yeah, no doubt. What are some of the things that you're hearing back from the people that you're meeting with? I know there were a lot of personnel folks at your pro day.
Just basically, they like how I play. They like how I'm around the ball. They like my versatility. and pretty much just trying to learn about me a little bit more, and just because, you know, the combine process is kind of different this year. We can't really see them in person, so they just want to kind of get to know me, see how I think and things of that nature.
Yeah, and I think for a guy like you, it's really unfortunate that you can't have those in-person meetings because, I mean, you're not showing it as much here, but on pro day, like I saw, and you could kind of feel like your passion for the game when you were asked about, you know, being doubted for your size and those type of things. So it is unfortunate because I would imagine you would be a guy that if a GM, you know, sat down in front of you, he would feel your passion for the game. And I think that's really important. But one of the things that they could still do is get you on the whiteboard. Right. So is that something that they're doing where they'll go through checks and coverages on the outside and then go through what you would be required to do there, then what you would be required as a nickel?
Yes, sir. They definitely do that. I've been on the whiteboard a couple times with different teams. It's they'll teach me a defense, and then 10 minutes later, I have to explain it to them when they put their film on. It's just make the checks that the nickel and the corner is supposed to make. They'll make me learn nickel and corner. So, just going through that, I feel like I was prepared since high school because, I mean, I feel like we've been doing this since St. Thomas. But it's definitely good work.
Yeah, for sure. That makes 100% sense. The Titans, I know that's a team that's been on your, that has you on their radar. Do you recall meeting with them and did anything stand out?
Yes, I met with the Titans, I think, twice. And I was talking to mainly the GM, the head coach, and just some of the personnel on the Zoom meeting. But it was a good meeting. They were just trying to get to know me. We talked a little ball, and it was a great meeting.
Yeah, it's crazy because Coach Vrabel was one of your pop's teammates. You know, that's wild to think that now he's a coach and he's evaluating you. Were they one of the teams that had you on the whiteboard?
No, sir. They wasn't one of the teams. They just really wanted to get to know me and talk to me and just kind of like, something like that.
Gotcha. And what really is the difference? You know, a lot of people say, okay, well, you have a guy who is just a nickel. You have a guy who's just outside. You're a guy that could play both. Can you kind of compare and contrast those two spots?
Really, it's like the people that can go inside and outside, it brings more versatility to the defense just in case you have to mix things up during the week or throughout the season. You know, guys get injured, unfortunately, guys get injured, and just things happen throughout the year. So just being able to have that versatility and being able to adjust with the defense, that helps the defense and the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, and last thing, Asante, and I appreciate you coming on. When a team drafts you, right, you know, what are they getting? What type of player are they getting, and why should a team invest their draft stock in you?
Oh, well, they're getting a playmaker with a high IQ that's a natural-born leader. So, they should draft me because I feel like I'm a winner. I've been winning all my life since Little League, high school, this Florida State one. But Florida State taught me how to deal with adversity. So I felt like that even made me a better player and just being able to go through that. And I just feel like I'm a winner at the end of the day, and I'm going to do winning things and make winning plays.
And I'm not going to let you leave out the run defense because that's there. And anybody who wants to question that, obviously, you know, the coming up and tackling A.J. Dillon one-on-one, you know, it wasn't a big hit, but you took him out. So, you know, I'm not going to let you not focus on that as well. So there's a complete game, and that's why I like watching your game. Sante, I appreciate you, man. Definitely going to keep track of how things go throughout this process, man, and I wish you the best.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on here.
All right, for sure. Take care, man.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
Perfect song right here. Daytona 500. Yes, sir. You know what happens in Daytona 500. You know what that focus is on, right? Speed. So our next guest, he got speed for days. And, man, I'm excited about this one. Louisville wide receiver, playmaker, Tutu Atwell. Tutu, what's good, man?
How you doing, man?
Hey, everything is good, man. I appreciate you coming on, man. And you know, I want to just get into first and foremost the speed aspect. And with you, it's really interesting because your speed shows up, in my opinion, more on the field. Like watching you on the field, I say that's a 4.2 guy. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You graded out 4.32. It's still ultra respectable. But what is the key for you in having that speed that you bring showcase on the field?
It's just a different aspect. When I'm on the field, it's all throttle. I give my all and just try to beat the person in front of me and try to make things happen with my legs and with my hands. Whenever I'm on the field, I just play hard and try to do what I got to do.
Let's look at your career at Louisville. 3 seasons, 140 receptions, 2,300 yards, 21 touchdowns. That's pretty good. Last year, 47 receptions, 625 with 7 touchdowns. I like the 2019 season as well. 70 receptions, 1,276 yards, and 12 TDs. What is it about your playmaking ability that allows you to put those type of numbers up?
Just the fun of the game. I just go out there and have fun every chance I get. When I first came in, I was always a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't ever play receiver until I got to Louisville my freshman year. I enrolled early, got on my plays, know the playbook, got a chance to play as a freshman, did what I had to do, and then the next season, my sophomore season, I made some goals, set some goals, some high goals for myself. And that what I wanted to accomplish with it was be an All-American, lead ACC, first team ACC, and I just went out with a bang and I accomplished all them goals, and I just had a great season for me and myself, and everything went great, and it just played out.
You played a lot in the slot, and I thought that's interesting because you know as a former quarterback, you understand. Especially how important it is to be on the same page with that slot. You know, he breaks out. You got to make sure that you're throwing it out because, you know, if you don't, it's an interception. So having that connection to your quarterbacking days, how much did that really help you be able to excel even more in the slot?
It helps a lot. Just knowing the position and knowing what he got to do and his reads and me knowing that, it just helped me a lot. Some plays we was always on the same page, and that would made it better for us. And our timing was awesome and great. So, just me and him getting together and knowing each other well, it played out very good for us.
Yeah, and you have the NFL. Well, yeah, I mean your dad. You know he had a spot in the NFL, but he was a standout guy at Minnesota. So you know, looking at that, and as a receiver, you know what I mean, at University of Minnesota. So obviously. There were some gems that he passed on to you. Would you care to share anything that you picked up along the lines?
Just pretty much. He gave me self-talks. He talked to me, put me to the side. He always on me when it comes to football. And no matter if I have a good game, he gonna tell me I did bad. He gonna tell me what I did wrong. He ain't gonna never tell me what I did good. It's always the bad he tell me. And that pretty much just made me go even harder. And I thank him for that.
Yeah. So always driving you to excel, basically.
Right.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And then watching you play, you know, you look at some of the plays that you make. It's really interesting because the quarterback Cunningham, like, he'll put that thing up there, and sometimes you're watching it, you're like, I don't know if he's gonna get it. But then it's, you know, you hit that gear and you accelerate to it and you track it really well. What's behind that? How did you develop that ability to do that so well?
Just pretty much just, like I say, just it's a timing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Every day after practice, I ain't gonna say every day, but sometimes after practice, we gotta get that timing. Let's throw deep balls. Let me track the ball. And just having fun out there. I just tell him, just throw it. No matter what, just throw it. I'm gonna go get it. And he trusts me enough to do that, and I'm gonna make it happen.
Yeah, and it definitely showed. I had that 90-yarder against FSU in mind when I was explaining, you know, tracking and accelerating to it. And I love players that are able to do that are able to find another gear, get faster. And that's like DeSean Jackson type of stuff, you know, to hit that next level. But it's interesting with you because it's not just running down the field and catching the football. You're a guy who could catch a slant and make a house call. You're a guy who could catch the ball over the middle and make a house call. And I think of the Miami game. I was honestly watching Miami versus Louisville because I was doing my film study on Quincy Roche and Jalen Phillips. But I said, daggone, that darn Tutu Atwell, he got a jetpack attached to his back, man. So playing across the middle. I mean, look, you're 5'9", 155. You know, a lot of people are going to say, hey, you know, he's too small to do that. Why is it that you're able to be a guy that can make plays in the middle of the field or wherever else anyone wants you to make a play?
For me, I got a big heart. That's something I always had. I always played with the big guys and always wanted to play with the older guys. And that don't faze me. I've been knocked down by bigger people growing up, and that's all I played with. People older than me, and to me, I mean, I'm a dog. I got that heart, so that don't faze me. I don't let none of that faze me. I just do what I got to do and get the job done.
Yeah, no doubt. So how do you respond? Like if someone, you know, you're watching ESPN's draft covers, right? And mm-hmm. you see one of the guys up there say, you know, Tutu Atwell is a great player, but I just don't know how he will be because he's little. How do you respond to that? What goes through your mind when you see that type of stuff?
Just turn the film on, man. Film don't lie.
Real simple, directly to the point.
Film don't lie. Just turn it on, man. I can do whatever.
Hey, man, you can't hit what you can't catch. That's something right. else, too.
Right.
So, yeah, that size is not a skill. I think that's something that's important. Making plays in space. What do you feel... You know, Louisville's offense, you know, with Scott Satterfield, how do you feel that really gave you an opportunity to make plays in space?
It gave me a big opportunity. Coach Satterfield and the whole staff I played a part of the offense. I played a big part of the offense, and I just had to do my job at all times. When my number was called, when the ball was called or gone to me, I just had to make that play because I had teammates relying on me and just looking up to me. And whether I make that play, I have to make that play to set the tone off and just get us going. Because when they see me set the tone off, then they like, okay, we got to go now. So I played a big part of the offense. So it was a great – he gave me a great opportunity to do what I had to do.
And what about the versatility? And we're talking to Tutu Atwell, Louisville wide receiver. What about the versatility aspect, right? You know, being a vertical threat, being a guy that could run choice routes, being a guy that could catch the slant and get you the free yards. But what about the now routes, you know, screens, jet sweeps, and those type of things? How much will that showcase your ability in the next level?
It was awesome, Coach. I mean, when we first did it, we was killing everybody with it. Jet sweep, the screen, me taking it for 80, 70 yards. I mean, then the next season, a lot of people caught on. So by them catching on, okay, y'all going to follow me? Come on, I'll bring all y'all with me. The whole team going to follow me. I'm taking about three or four guys with me every time I motion, getting the jet sweep. Okay, now it opened up the run play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now Hawk getting the ball and breaking it for 80 and 70. Now Dez getting the ball. You get what I'm saying? So, I mean, I love my role that I play in this offense, and it just helped open my teammates and get them some of their stats up. So it was a pretty – I had a good season at Louisville.
That's a team-first approach, you know, willing to be the decoy to open things up for others. That's excellent that you mentioned that. What about just some of the things that you're hearing back from teams, you know, personnel folks that you've met with? What's the feedback like?
Just pretty much they love my personality. They love the confidence that I have. They love my game. They love the way I play. Great hands. And they just, there's a lot of good feedback from a lot of the teams. They love my, they love my personality and the way who I am today.
Nice. Is that something I would imagine is just, you know, a product of being down there in Miami?
Yes, sir.
I know football is really important to you guys, and you know that having that flavor is too. So I would imagine that definitely.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Got to have it.
Yeah. Yeah, what about some of the things you're working on, right? Like, I know you're working on route running. That's a given. Every receiver is working on that. But let's go back to the size aspect, right? You're 5'9", 155. You know what's going to happen. Corners are going to come up and say, man, I got to get my hands on him. So
right.
Tell me about your releases. How are you coming along with that?
I'm great. Just coming along with it very well. Just watching Dez and Justin and them just try to steal so many little points. I even watched NFL cut-ups that Coach Boo had for us. And I know when I watch the film and my defender who's sticking me, I just watch how he plays. Not just watch how he plays, watch is he aggressive? Is he play back? What hand he jab with? Do he play inside all the time? Do he play outside? Is he going to follow me? So I just watch them different key points and just take advantage of them. And just that's how I approach my defender and work them.
Yeah, the science of it, that's really important. And I mean, with your speed, they better get a hand on you, because you know what happens if they don't. If I'm even, what you doing? I'm leaving. Who are some of the NFL guys you watch? Because I know Scott Satterfield, he coached T.Y. Hilton. He made that comp for you. But who are some of the guys that you've watched?
I watched T.Y. Hilton a little bit, I didn't watch him as much as I watched Tyreek Hill and Mooney.
Yeah.
And Lockett. I watched them three guys.
Ooh. Tyler Lockett is one of my favorite receivers in the league, man.
Yeah, he's
dope.
He got the ball nice.
Yeah, and Mooney, you know, we had him on the show on this show last year. Mooney is a problem on the outside, so I'm glad you mentioned him.
I like his route running.
Yeah, yeah. What about the special teams aspect? What do you bring there?
I play punt return. I didn't pretty much get to show off my skills back at punt return. I did a little bit as you watch those games, EKU and Wake Forest. Had little runs from there, but I was always second screen. I was a big part of the offense, so I guess Coach Sutherland want me back there for anything bad to happen, knock on wood. But I was the second screen, but when my number was called, I was back there.
Yeah, no doubt. Playmaking ability is in abundance. Before we get you out of here, this is a Titans show, man. Tutu, have you met with the Titans? And if so, what stood out about it?
Yes, I met with the Titans. It was a great coaches all on there. We had great conversations, great scouts, everybody. I love their appearance and everything.
Did they ask you about, like, your love for the game or your love for ball? That's how they phrase it.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I know you got a lot of meetings, man. I get it.
I don't remember. But
yeah.
We had great conversations, and we talked over some ball. Went over some of my film, and I went over some of the plays, I think.
Okay.
And it was good. It was great. Everything was great. It was a great meeting.
Is that something you're seeing overall, not just the Titans meeting, but collectively, that they're, you know, putting plays on the whiteboard, explaining it to you, asking you a question, and then saying, hey, tell me about my play?
Right, yeah. That's what all the teams doing. And I just sit there and pay attention and have my notes, and I just get them great feedback back. And that's what they love.
Yeah. And that's important for a guy like you who plays with so much speed, right? Because, you know, you're only going to be able to play with speed if you know where you're going and what you're doing. So I'm glad that you're able to, you know, spit it right back at him, man. That's what's up. Well, Tutu, man, I appreciate you, man. Let's see how this thing works. I know the Titans, they need a guy who could make plays from the slot. They need a guy who can make plays in the punt return game, and that could end up being you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the call.
Yeah, for sure, man. Take care.
You too.
All right.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Yeah, that Get Hype music. It's only right that I play that music because I am as excited as I've been throughout this whole process for this next interview. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, any single time I'm asked about the tight ends in this draft class. Yeah, Kyle Pitts. Yeah, Kyle Pitts is a great player. But you ask me about tight ends in this draft class and who matches the Titans, I'm always saying Brevin Jordan. So why not bring the guy I'm always talking about onto the show? Brevin, what's good, man?
What's going on?
Hey, man, it's all you right now, man. You know what I'm saying? So I speaking of you, let's talk about the you, right? Tight end you. You got guys, Greg Olsen, Bubba Franks, Jeremy Shockley, so many guys, man. Now is you coming up. What does the history of tight ends at the University of Miami mean to you, and why was that such a big factor in you ending up there at Miami?
I mean, it's a rich tradition. I mean, the line just literally follows, and it continues to follow. I mean, I think after me, you know, there's going to be guys like Will Mallory and even, you know, Elijah Arroyo. You know, the list just continues to go up, man. It's a tight end, and anybody that tries to question it or tries to debate it, I'm sorry, but you're silly. You need to get some help. You're silly. So, I mean, the University of Miami is just a rich tradition. It factored into my decision a little bit, but what factored into the decision for me to go to Miami was, you know, Coach Mark Rick was in his second year of a five-year contract. Chris Herndon was leaving. It was his senior year. So, I mean, and at the time, they were number two in the country, 10-0. So, I mean, when I visited Miami, you know, it was more so a business decision. It was hard to go across the country, especially a kid all the way from Vegas. But it was, you know, it was just a business decision. It was the right decision for me to make.
I know that warm weather. I know that definitely helped it as well. You know, I heard you on the Pro Day interview. You said you were happy to be back in Miami because it was cold in Vegas. So I'm sure that factored in too, huh?
Most definitely. The water in the Palm Beach was screaming my name.
No doubt. And just speaking of that culture, right, and just, you know, the things that go on there at the U as far as development and everything like that. Ed Reed, the culture coach, I thought that was interesting. How much were you able to just kind of get the feel and understanding of what goes into that tradition and what goes into putting that jersey on that says Miami on it?
Man, Ed Reed, you know, he preaches to us, you know, about accountability. That's what the culture of Miami was about, man, accountability and just hard work. That's what Ed Reed used to preach to us all the time. And having him in the building was like, at first, man, it was scary because I'm like, man, this Ed Reed, like,
right.
He was just, it was like a terrifying respect. It was like a fearful respect for him because of just how he goes about the game, how he goes about his business. At the end of his career, there's a reason why he put on that gold jacket. And just, you know, we could be in the locker room, it could be loud in there, everybody's talking, music is playing, but the minute he walked in, he didn't have to say anything. You just knew he was in there. And you just, you know, you turned down the music a little bit, you just knew he was in there. His presence was felt so strongly amongst the building.
I would imagine that being like a situation where it's like, yo, that's Unk, man. Like, I got to do everything right for Unk, you know, before everything else. That's kind of how I would have seen it. But, yeah, that's dope, man. You got a Hall of Famer there that you're able to interact with and learn from. That's what's up, man. You were the number one tight end in the country coming out of high school. I think that's something that we definitely need to mention. And you get to Miami. How does the number one tight end – in the nation develop? Like, in what ways did you grow there at the U?
I mean, I grew a lot as a person. I mean, I got to the University of Miami. I came from Bishop Gorman. So, I mean, I was used to, you know, competitive practices, guys, you know, arguing in practice and, you know, just wanting to get better. But I think the University of Miami helped build me as a person. You know, I think Miami really got me comfortable in my skin to show my true personality because there's a lot of culture, a lot of personality at the University of Miami. So, I mean, especially in practice, though, going against, you know, guys like Jalen Phillips, Greg Rousseau, Quincy Roche, those guys, man, I'm going up against the best talent every day. I'm going up against Bubba Bolden in practice every day and one of the top safeties who's going to be the top safety in next year's draft class. So, I mean, I was going up against, you know, top-tier dudes, top-tier talent every day across South Florida. So, I mean, Miami just helped build me as a person, but it definitely helped build me as a football player.
No doubt. And I'm glad you mentioned going against Rousseau, mentioned going against Roche, going against Jalen Phillips, because it's funny, like, you know, I always see, oh, well, he has improved as a blocker, but, I mean, let's face the facts, you had to block from the minute you got on campus and even change positions, which we'll get into, you know, play some fullback and do those type of things. But how much did going against them really help you as a blocker just develop that aspect of your game?
Oh, man, it helped me a lot. I gave a lot of my credit to them because they helped me a lot. Those are the three of the best guys in the country, I feel like, in my opinion. Jalen Phillips, Greg Rousseau, and even Quincy Roche with his technique and his hand placement, just how he goes about the game. Man, I learned a lot from them dudes. Them dudes really upped my game, upped my blocking at least, because, man, those are three of the best guys in the country. You know, just the way they play the game, Jalen's motor, all three of them each have a different technique. You know, Jalen's motor is just unmatchable. Jalen just flies through the ball. He just goes. He just has a different type of motor. Greg is super long, super athletic, you know, so Greg's going to beat you with his athleticism. And Quincy will say he's not the biggest guy, but if you gave him a couple inches, man, he'd be a top two defender because his technique is impeccable. He's great with his hands. He's great with his hips. He knows how to, you know, win off blocks. He's just all three of them, you know, they make the games way easier. So, I mean, when I'm blocking them in practice, I went into the games, like, with no fear, with no fear. Like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, no doubt. We're talking to Brevin Jordan, Miami tight end. Brevin, the usage, though, right? I've seen you all over the place. You know, I've seen you in line, blocking down on that defensive end so the running back could bounce it outside. I've seen you in the slot, running a post with excellent nuance with the route as far as leaning and head fakes and being able to get that defender to turn the wrong way. I see you line up outside, run the slot. I see you H-back, they bring you across the formation, and you run that speed out and catch the ball and turn up field. Folks, watch the Louisville game, as a matter of fact. You'll see him catch the ball, turn up field, and he had the nerve to hurdle one of the defenders and route to the end zone. So, I mean, you're getting everything. Tell me a little bit about the usage, you know, and just the way that they showcase you from that perspective.
I mean, it just showed my athleticism. I mean, you can't just keep me in line or you can't just keep me in the slot. When you're moving me all over the field, that creates stress on the defense. And that's just the type of player I am. You know, I create stresses on defense. I make teams have to game plan for me and have to, you know, double me and bracket me so the other guys on the outside can get open. I mean, I played everywhere. I literally played everywhere. There were times, you know, especially last year, I was throwing the ball. I was having to play quarterback at times and throw, you know, on trick plays, throw the ball because my usage and my involvement in the offense was so heavy. You know, so, I mean, that's just what I do. That's me as a player. And I think that's how I'm going to be using the NFL. I create stress on defenses. That's just the type of player I am. I'm an athletic player. So when you put me all over the field, it just, you know, creates stress on defenses. And defenses have to figure out, you know, what to do, how to adjust. And, you know, that's just the type of player I am.
What was the key for you just in working through? I mean, you had so many different offensive coordinators. How did you work through that and still be able to play fast? Because, you know, you're learning a new scheme. And you're out there thinking, and you know that's going to make you play slower, but that wasn't really the case for you. Why not?
I mean, I think it's just because of my dedication to the game of football. I mean, I like you said, I had three different offensive coordinators, four different quarterbacks. So, I mean, I think I just built a trust in all three of my offensive coordinators, you know. So that's just me. You know, that's just me, how I approach the game of football, how I study the playbook. You know, I wasn't going to allow myself to go out there and make a mistake and, you know, not know what I'm doing. Because when you don't know what you're doing, you can't play like yourself. I've seen guys who are athletic freaks, you know, and they don't got the playbook down. And, you know, they go out there and they can't play because they don't know what they're doing. So I never, from the minute I got to Miami, I said I'm not ever going to put myself in that position. I'm never going to be in that position. And I take the game of football seriously. You know, I just studied the playbook down and I just made sure every scheme, you know, that I was placed in, that I knew it.
Yeah, that's what's up. And I know you had Coach Field there to be in your corner. I'm sure that he did an excellent job of keeping you right. I want to get into the nuance on your routes, you know, because I mentioned, you know, leaning to that corner, putting your foot in the ground, and using that head fake to the outside as you go into the post. You know, these are different things, and I see you using different head fakes and leans and things like that on your routes. Is that something that just kind of developed naturally? Is that purposely? How did you get that nuance to your route running?
So, yeah, I mean, it definitely started. It's really a natural thing, but at Miami, you know, with Coach Field and Coach Likens and, you know, the receivers coaches I've had, Coach Stubblefield and Coach Todd Harley, I mean, I had to, you know, learn the techniques because technique, especially at the NFL level, is so important. It's very important. Like, you can't just go out there and just use athletic ability without, you know, knowing the small little tendencies that need to be placed in order to be a great route runner. So I think a lot of it was my athletic ability, but also a lot of it, you know, was learning how to be a crisp route runner. You know, and I think at my pro day, I showed every scout, every GM who was there, you know, that I'm a crisp route runner. You know, I was out there running every route you could think of, from the slot, from the backfield, in line. So, I mean, that it comes naturally, but it also came with a lot of teaching.
Hey, bruh, props to you for pro day, by the way. Because there was no one else out there running routes. It was literally Tupac, all eyes on me, man. That's what it was. And that took a lot of conditioning because, you know, you had to run the route, come back, run the route. There was no break in between that, man. So I want to shout you out on that. That was dope. Like, you showed grit and the willingness to push through.
Yes, sir. I was out there dying.
Listen, I watched. I saw.
I was out there dying, but I kept... I kept it, though. I didn't want to bend over or nothing. I didn't want to show anybody that I was tired, but I ain't gonna lie, I was out there dying. I was tired.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And then on the you know, the measurable side of things, I know that you didn't quite hit where you wanted to, and it was funny because not, what, 5 seconds after you were done your interview, you were putting on Twitter, hey, who got the results for your short shuttle? I thought that was funny, but, I mean, when you look at the results, like, what do you make of those results? Why is that something that, you know, should only be a fraction of this whole evaluation process?
Man, it shouldn't even be a fraction. Am I still speaking enough? If anybody has to judge me off of my pro day, off of my 40, my starts, my shuttle, and my vertical, like, I'm sorry, but you're silly. You need to get some help. Like, the game of football is not about your vertical or your 40. None of that stuff matters. There's guys who run 4.3 40s, but on the field, you know, they play slow because they might not know the game plan, or they're not playing as fast because, you know, just the game of football. Man, my tape speaks it all. Man, I'm going out there and I run fast on tape. You know, I jump high on tape. Like, there ain't no question. If you have to question my athletic ability, you know, there's something wrong with you, man, because I've done it consistently for 3 years in a row. There shouldn't be a question about it.
Hey, look, man, Brevin, that's music to my ears because I'm of that same elk where, you know, the spider charts and percentiles, like, those things are all good. But you know what? It isn't about that. It's about what you do on the football field. They're paying you to play football, not to, you know, be in shorts and a T-shirt and run around. So I'm glad you got to that. I want to talk a little bit about some comps, man. And in watching what you do, I can't help but think, and this is on the field strictly, so, you know, let's make sure that we understand that. I can't help but think Aaron Hernandez, you know what I mean, because of how you line up all over the place, including in the backfield. What do you think of that comparison, and who are some guys that you've watched?
I love it. I love it. You know, that's the main guy I used to watch, was Aaron Hernandez. That dude was tough. He was tough. He used to juke people. He used to line up all over the field. I mean, that's actually the main comparison I like the most. I mean, Aaron Hernandez was super productive, you know, especially when he was getting wins, and he was just super productive. He's a super elite athlete. He was super agile in the way his movements were. He was super fluid, not a lot of wasted movements. But Aaron Hernandez is pretty spot on. You know, I like Antonio Gates. I actually watched a lot of Dallas Clark when he played with Peyton Manning.
What you know about Dallas Clark, man?
Yeah, I know a lot about Dallas Clark. He was a little bit before my age. I was like 5 years old when I was watching him. But, you know, as I'm getting into this process, I've watched a lot of Dallas Clark. Because,
that's
man, he was a lot of all over the field. He was a problem. He's not the biggest dude, but he was just a problem. Size matters definitely in the game of football. But at the tight end position, man, if you're over 6'1", you could do it. You can go out there and be a problem. And I even watched Jonu Smith today, because Jonu Smith, I mean, they line up in the backfield. They give him sweeps. I mean, he's in the spot. He's monster people. He gets to show his athletic ability. So, I mean, any guys that really gets to show their athletic ability, you know, the comparison is always there.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Jonu, because that's my boy, by the way. Jonu is great people, man. Congrats to Jonu going up to New England and getting that deal. But that's another guy who I've always compared you to. That's really the primary one. But then I started thinking about seeing you in the backfield and some of the things, you know, as an H-back. And I said, yeah, you know, Aaron Hernandez is in there too. So I'm glad you mentioned him. And the Titans, they need somebody to replace Jonu Smith. Can it be Brevin Jordan? Very possible. That being said, did you get to meet with the Titans at all?
Yeah, I met with the Titans very early in the process, very, very early. I still meet with them today, but, you know, I met with them quite a couple times, quite a lot, you know. So, I mean, I think the comparison to Jonu Smith is reasonable, but in my opinion, you know, in my eyes, you know, I'm a very different type of player, and just how I go about the game, you know. So, I mean, the possibility of going to the Titans is very exciting, because, I mean, they just lost Jonu, and Jonu, I know, brought a lot of excitement to Tennessee. So, I mean, to get that comparison is, you know, it's huge. It's a big deal.
And we're talking to Miami tight end Brevin Jordan. And, Brevin, I know, I get it, man. You want to go home to the Raiders. So, I get it, man. It's all good. But we'll see what happens. I want to get into a little bit of off-the-field stuff. You know, your pops, he played for the Falcons. He was drafted by the Falcons. What would you say to him, like, if you had the opportunity to speak to him on draft night after your name is called? What would you say to him?
I would just be like, we did it. We did it, dog. You know, he would just have a big old smile. I know my pops, he would just have a big old smile. He would be cracking jokes. And I would just be like, we did it, man. Like, let's get to work. Like, I'm ready to get to work.
And I'm sure, you know, your mother, what she has endured, right? A third stage breast cancer survivor. I mean, it doesn't get much more intense and survivor like that's outstanding. So I'm sure like she's a hero of yours. When you get into the league, they have in October, they have the cancer, like the bringing awareness. It used to be just breast cancer awareness month, but it's just overall. Do you see yourself like doing some things that month when you're in the league just to further bring awareness?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely, man. I gotta represent. I'm gonna be dripped out in straight pink. I'm probably gonna have pink gloves, pink cleats, pink wrist tape, pink spat. You know, I gotta drip out for breast cancer or for cancer awareness month, man. Because my mom's a breast cancer survivor, so you know that's definitely a huge deal to me.
TE with swag. I like that, man. This is great, Brevin. I appreciate you. Before I get you out of here, man, I gotta ask you the playmaker aspect. You know, that's what you call yourself, and I get it. You know, there's a commonality at the U, right, Michael Irvin. But what is it about you that makes you such a playmaker? Why is that something that has to be labeled to your name, Brevin Jordan?
Because it's simple fact. I mean, it really is a simple fact. You give me the ball every time, no matter what it is, I'm moving the chains in some form or aspect. I move the chains. Like, every time I got the ball, I damn near got a first down. Like, there's no I get a bubble. I can get the first down. If it's second and 12, I'll get the first down on a bubble. Like, I'm just a simple playmaker. You get the ball in my hands, I turn into a big old running back. You know, and you could put me in downfield situations. You could have me run a seam or post, and I'm going to win the situation. You know, there's times where I'm just being a simple playmaker, you know, where it looks like it's a dead play, but I'm going out there just simply using my athletic ability and making plays. You know, so I consider myself a big-time playmaker for sure.
And you do have running back in your background. I'm going to say that since you didn't. And that's something that really allows that transition into running back once you touch the football, that allows that to happen. Injuries. How do you approach someone who may question you and say you're injury prone or dare I say, call you soft?
Hey, man, I just ignore it. I'm just like, whatever, dude. I mean, especially at Miami. Man, tight ends, I don't know what it is about something at the University of Miami, but tight ends just get hurt a little bit. Tight ends get banged up. I think it's because, we're, you know, we have to do so much. You know, I was playing 70 snaps a game. I've been doing it since my freshman year, since literally my freshman year. As a true freshman from day one against LSU, I played 77 snaps. Every game at my university, at the time at Miami, I played 70-plus snaps. Like, that's just, you know, I have to do a lot. I have to block. I have to cool. I have to block defensive tackles. I have to block defensive ends. I have to catch the ball, turn up, get running back. I'm turning to a running back, and I'm getting hit every play. You know, that injuries are part of the game of football. You know, it's just the magnitude I was suffering. And there was a lot of times at Miami, you know, I'm playing with serious injuries, and I was just playing through it. You know, so, I mean, it is what it is. You know, I laugh, I smile, but I'm blessed to just be in this situation, man. People are going to say what they want to say. But the minute I get drafted by their team and I'm start making plays on Sunday, they're going to forget all about that.
And last thing, I promise. I lied before, but I promise this is the last thing. Matching you up against linebackers, why is that such an advantage for you, and what will happen in those situations?
Oh, I laugh. You know, I feel disrespectful when you put a linebacker on me. That's just disrespectful. Like, why would you put a linebacker on me? That's not going to help you. That's not going to work for you. That's a terrible decision. Like, put a strong safety on me. Give me a safety or put somebody on me that can match my speed. Because linebackers, when linebackers line up out there with me, I laugh, man. I'm like, I just get excited. The hairs on my body start to stand up when I see a linebacker on me pre-play. I mean, for me, it's a sign of disrespect. Like, you're not really respecting me. If you're going to put a linebacker on me, you better have a safety over top because I'm going to run past him. So, I mean, it's all good, though. It's all good. If you put a linebacker on me, man, I'm laughing, though. If there's a linebacker on me, people, I'm looking at the quarterback, and I'm screaming at him. Like, yo, look at the matchup. Look at the matchup. Like, it's just, don't put a linebacker on me. That's just the ultimate sign of disrespect.
Ladies and gentlemen, can you feel that? That's what you call energy, passion, and love for football. Brevin, I appreciate you, man. I can't wait to watch you play on Sunday. Like I said, anytime I'm asked, it's Brevin Jordan. They're not even finishing saying tight ends, you know what I'm saying, before your name comes out of my mouth. So, man, I appreciate you coming on. I wish you the best. Definitely see how this all works out, man.
My man, appreciate it. You guys for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. Take care.